Good evening and welcome. It's good to see everybody. Take out your Bibles, follow along. And if you wouldn't mind, I know this is a little weird one, remind me to get my cell phone after class. I've got it in the back and it's currently doing Zoom and I'm just know I'm going to leave without it. So if somebody would remind me, that would be great. Okay, so we are on, really this is I think lesson 7, but we're on lesson 5 in our books on the apostles, and we are just doing the last question of that lesson in regards to John the apostle. And a quick review of what we've covered thus far. We started off in the first 2 weeks just doing an overview of apostles, that they are specific men chosen by Jesus to be sent out. That term sent out means, is what apostles means. You could be sent out by a bunch of different situations. Churches could send you out, but to be an apostle, capital A, it is Jesus sending you out with primary the mission to be a witness of his works, his teaching, and especially his resurrection. And we talked about the great power that the apostles had, that they would receive miraculous powers from the Holy Spirit and they could give those gifts to others. And we talked about their teaching, and most importantly to us, their teaching being inspired from God, meaning when you read it, you are reading God's message to you. And then we started getting into the apostles themselves, looking at their characteristics and trying to learn lessons. And just a few that really stick out to me is with Simon the Zealot reminding us that the only thing we have about him is him being a zealot, which was so contrary to what Jesus was going to ultimately teach. And he chose Jesus over his background, over his political affiliation, over what was once his passion, his defining passion. With Matthias, we're reminded of somebody who's following Jesus even when he's not been handpicked by Jesus. And he shows devotion in that way. Andrew shows us that just inviting one person can have a great impact to the Lord's work. Thomas shows us that you can have this conflict of doubt and heroic conviction. Matthew showed us that all people are welcome to Jesus as a tax collector. And then James makes the ultimate sacrifice. And James, of course, his brother is John. And that leads us to where we're at now. And since we're looking at this and realizing not, when new Christians come to the Bible, it's very confusing to them. One of the great challenges is there's so many people that have the same name. And in the New Testament, one of the hardest ones to get straight is John versus John. So who is it that you most likely confuse John the Apostle with? Or John the Baptist, right. So those are two totally different people, and they come, they cross over time-wise, but really if you think about Jesus as his ministry on earth, John the Baptist is before, John the Apostle is afterwards. They cross over, of course. John the Baptist doesn't die till during Jesus' ministry, and John the Apostle is called at the beginning of Jesus' ministry, but when you're looking at the beginning of the Gospels, you're probably talking about John the Baptist. When you're looking at the end of the Gospels and into the rest of the epistles, you're talking about John the Apostle. But you do have to pay attention within context to make sure you get that one right. All right, so John's family. We already know some of it, right? We know he is the son of Zebedee. We see this in Matthew 4 and verse 21 when he is being called by Jesus to come follow him. It says, going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James the son of Zebedee and John his brother, in the boat with Zebedee their father, mending their nets, and he called them. Immediately they left the boat and their father and followed him. And so we have James and John are the sons of Zebedee, James's brother. You might remember from last week, that's kind of switches. So it starts off as James has a brother named John, and then becomes, well, no, John has a brother named James. John's role within the church is going to increase and become more significant, and then James is going to be known as, oh, you're John's brother, rather than John known as, oh, you're James' brother. Then we get to some question marks. Now we know John had a mother, but as far as her name, we think it's Salome. And we're going to talk about that in a second. Because there's another question mark, and this is one that's not as widely known. And that is, the next step is very possibly, And I'll show you why in a second. He is also Jesus's cousin. And so you have something of a family affair going on. Now, Gary was talking to me about this afterwards. Gary, on what grounds would you say that Jesus and John might be cousins? I'll give you some passages to help you.
You normally see them together, traveling together, being together. Matthew 27,
I think. So what happens is we have the benefit of parallel accounts. And so if you look at one account and it gives you some information, and you look at another account that's the same event and it gives you a little different information, you add the information together. Now, that can go astray. That's why we have a question mark here. This isn't certain, but we're going to put this on the fairly likely category. So let's take a look at it. You'll notice the passages on mother and cousin are the first two are the same because it's the same thought process. So let's start off Matthew 27, verse 56. Among them was Mary Magdalene, and Mary, the mother of James and Joseph, and the mother of the sons of Zebedee. Now, these are the women who are standing at a distance at the crucifixion of Jesus. And it describes them, Mary Magdalene, Mary, the mother of James and Joseph, and then and the mother of the sons of Zebedee. So we know the mother of the sons of Zebedee was there. In a parallel account listing the women at the cross, so now we look at Mark 15 and verse 40. Same scenario, we're talking about the time when Jesus has just died, the women that are right there. It says, there were also some women looking on from the distance, among whom were Mary Magdalene, and Mary the mother of James the Less, and Joseph, and Salome. And you follow through, and that is parallel, except for at the end, instead of saying the mother of the sons of Zebedee, it says Salome. Now, I cannot guarantee you that, but the likelihood is Salome is the name of John's mother. Now, you'll remember that last week we talked about John's mother and James' mother was following Jesus, was ministering to him and helping him through his ministry in Galilee. Also, when we were further along in Matthew chapter 20, and James and John were trying to get their way into a more powerful position, they had their mother ask Jesus to give the right and left hand to James and John. Well, John chapter 19, verse 25. Now we take that information and we go over to John chapter 19, verse 25, and we're at a very similar scene. We are technically a little bit off. We're still at the cross. We're still talking about the women at the cross. They're now close to the cross. This is before Jesus dies. And it says, therefore the soldiers did these things, but standing by the cross of Jesus were his mother and his mother's sister, Mary the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. Now, if his mother's sister isn't Mary the wife of Clopas, because we can't actually tell if this just told us four women or three, but I can almost guarantee you it's four and not three, and this is why. I really, really doubt that Mary's parents had a child and said, we will name you Mary. And then they had another child and said, we like the name Mary a lot. We're going to name you Mary too. See what would have happened there? Standing at the cross were his mother, we know her name, Mary, and his mother's sister, Mary, the wife of Clopas. I don't think they're both named Mary. So I think we're looking at four different women there, which means in all likelihood, Mary's sister is now Salome. Question mark. Can't guarantee that, but it is fascinating to think about this family affair that you have going on. It starts off with John the Baptist being related to Jesus, and now you have John. Is that what you were going to say, Gary?
That was one of the things.
Yes. What's the other thing? I'm curious.
It has always interested me that Jesus, in the next verse, tells John, Mary, here's your mother.
Right, so we'll get to that.
It makes more sense if there's some kind of relationship already for him to say that.
And that is one of the things that we would add to it, is that it does make more sense if this is a cousin, that the family relationship. But we're going to come back to the context there here in a second. So now getting into our questions, okay, finally, and if you'll notice, we're not even to a question yet, but John appears to be one of the closest disciples to Jesus. We saw this with James and the exact same passages we were looking at, and we have a little bit of time this morning, this evening, so let's look at Mark's account, because we can see all three of them in Mark. In Mark chapter 5 and verse 37, this is on the way to Jairus' house. And it says, he allowed no one to accompany him except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. And so this is the first time we see Jesus narrowing it down from, he has all these disciples and he's narrowed it down to 12. But then he narrows it down again, this time to 3. And he says, you guys come with me. And then in Mark chapter 9 and verse 2, when it is time to go to the Mount of Transfiguration, Jesus is going to be changed and you're going to see him in all of his glory. It says, 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and John and brought them up a high mountain by themselves, and he was transfigured before them. So the other apostles are important, but Jesus is singling these three out. John included with it. And then in Mark chapter 14 and verse 33, as Jesus comes to the Garden of Gethsemane and he is going to pray, he leaves his disciples at a distance, but he takes three of them and brings them a little bit closer. And of course, you can naturally guess who those three are going to be. So it says, he took with him Peter and James and John and began to be very distressed and troubled. So John is one of the few who would get to see the other miracle. John's one of the few who could actually see Jesus in his transfigured state. And John was one of those who saw him in his most emotional, distraught state. So that puts John in a significant position where even the apostles could come to John and say, what was that like? Whereas for everything else, people would come to the apostles as a whole and say, what was he like? What did he say? Things like that. So John's put in a very significant situation there. All right, so now we look at his calling. We already read Matthew 4. Let's look at Mark 1. As Jesus begins to gather people around him for his ministry. In verse 19, it says, going on a little farther. Now, a little further, what it's talking about is he's just called Peter and Andrew. If you look at John's account, we find out that they're all pretty closely connected. They're witnessing this miracle together. But going on a little further, he saw James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, who were also in the boat mending the nets. Immediately, he called them, and they left their father Zebedee in the boat with the hired hands and went away to follow him. All right, so the easy question, what was John's occupation before becoming an apostle? And he's a fisherman, not a great religious leader or lawyer. He just goes and he fishes. And who was he working with? His dad, his brother, and some hired hands, and Peter and Andrew. Because we find out that they were partners. All right. So he worked with James, Zebedee, Peter, and Andrew. It's very weird to say Zebedee. That's always sons of Zebedee, but that's his name, Zebedee. Okay. And then I really should remove the question. What did Jesus tell these men they would be doing if they followed him? Technically, in all the accounts, he's only saying that to Peter. I assume in the context he's saying it to all of them, but technically it was just to Peter that he was telling them, I'm going to change your job. I'm going to change your mission. You're no longer a fisher of fish. You're going to be a fisher of men. And then how did John and his brother respond to this? They left everything. And you should note in verse 20, they did not leave their dad high and dry. He still has helpers. He has somebody that's going to be helping him, the hired servants, which suggests also that John is coming from a family of some affluence, that they have hired servants. Okay. So John and his brother were known by what term from Mark 3 and verse 17? Sons of Thunder. Why?
They were going to call
Yeah, we can't say for certain why they were called Sons of Thunder. We think it's because of what we're going to look at next, because we're going to skip to question E next and look at when they start calling for fire to come from above, and that Jesus is calling them this based on their personality. But what do we call John today? He's the apostle of love. That's what he's called today. Why is he called the apostle of love? I don't think he describes himself as the apostle of love, does he? Am I missing?
I read it as the whom he loved.
No, not the disciple who's loved, but the apostle of love. So I see what you're saying. We'll get to that in a second. But yeah, John's message in the Bible is predominantly love. I mean, okay, so let me give you some numbers to put this in context. Besides what I have put up there in the emphasis, I mean, we have incredible passages on love. It is in John, and only in John, where Jesus gives this new commandment I give to you, that you love one another even as I have loved you. When John's the one who records that. And then our song this evening was God is Love. That's 1 John 4 and verse 8. It's not like the other books don't have anything about love. It's Paul who writes in 1 Corinthians 13. Here's this great definition of love, right? But here's the numbers. New American Standard, if you look at the number of times the word love occurs in the Bible, it's 529 times. 117 of those are going to come from John. That's about 20% of the time the Bible talks about love. I'm sorry, 22% of the time it's from John. Skip to the New Testament, and the New Testament talks about love 287 times, which now means 40% of the time it's John. Now, love is being talked about by everybody, but 40% of the time it's John. Or put in another context, if you combine the number of times Matthew, Mark, and Luke mention love, it's a little bit more than half the number of times John does. So John himself, almost twice as much as the other Gospels combined. There's a reason he's called the Apostle of Love. When he is giving his message from the Holy Spirit, but his emphasis is definitely on loving God and loving one another, and also talking about avoiding loving things of the world. All right. So my question then, what does this reveal about John? And to me, if you go from Sons of Thunder, and we never call him that. We never call him John, Son of Thunder. We look at him in a different light. We see him John, the Apostle of Love. And it suggests to me growth and change. And we'll talk about that here in a second. But what did John want to do then to the Samaritans who refused to let Jesus enter their village? And we've already hinted at this. We looked at it last week because we were looking at James, and he was just as involved with this. But in Luke chapter 9, verse 51 through 56, it says, when the days were approaching for his ascension, he was determined to go to Jerusalem. And he sent messengers on ahead of him, and they went and entered a village of the Samaritans to make arrangement for him. But they did not receive him because he was traveling towards Jerusalem. And when his disciples, James and John, saw this, they said, Lord, do you want us to command fire to come down from heaven and consume them? But he turned to them and rebuked them and said, you do not know what kind of spirit you are of, for the Son of Man did not come to destroy men's lives, but to save them. And they went on to another village, which, by the way, Jesus has just shown us a tremendous lesson. If you're going through life and people reject you and they don't treat you in a nice way, you know what you do? You go to the next village. You just go next, instead of being like James and John saying, I will destroy you. All right, so what did James and John do? Well, they wanted to have God bring fire down on the Samaritans, which, as we mentioned with James, shows a decent amount of faith. I mean, they think they can call to God and he will send flames down and destroy these villages. God can destroy the villages. God will listen to us because they did not treat Jesus the right way. And you can see where people think, well, this is where they're called the Sons of Thunder, and it's quite possible. But again, it gets us to how did they go from this to being the apostle of love. All right, question C, and I apologize for going back and forth, and I also apologize. John 1 and verse 40 is not the right reference. Don't know how it got in here or what I was thinking, and I worded this question terribly, so I've changed it up here. In the Gospel of John, John is referred to as the disciple whom he loved, whom Jesus loved, which is an incredible statement. Why do you suppose John refers to himself this way? Okay. That makes I thought that was a much better question than what it originally was, and I don't remember what it originally was. It was bad. And I don't want to deal with it right now. I wanted to put this first. How do we know that's John? I have always been taught that's John, but it's never told us that's John. So how do we know it's John? Any guesses? I mean, we're going to put this down as also a really, really certain, but not guaranteed, because it doesn't tell us it's John, but all the evidence piles up, and I'll show it to you. Gary, what were you going to say?
Well, could it be because there are times where John is in, and when they're eating, he's in Jesus' bosom.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a close relationship. That would be something that would be considered a loved position?
Yes, we know he's in a loved position. We know this guy, whoever this is in a loved position, right?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
How many Johns are apostles?
Well, no, it never says it's John.
No, I...
You're right. There's not a lot of John apostles, but I'm saying the disciple whom he loved, it does not say that's John.
Right. You're correct.
Okay. But what can we assume from the fact that it says it's the disciple whom he loved, who happens to be at the table when the Lord's Supper is given, who happens to be, he is at the resurrection, he is at the crucifixion. No, it doesn't say transfiguration. We don't know that one. So he doesn't, it's marked, John 13 is when this guy first shows up, name-wise, the disciple whom he loved. But what can we assume about him when he said, when based on that description and where he shows up? Where is he in relation to Jesus? I mean, is this, okay, why don't I just put it up here? It has to be a disciple close to Jesus. I mean, it just has to, because it's the disciple whom Jesus loved. Which means, if it's somebody who's really close to Jesus and we see him in all these circumstances, what are the odds he was not mentioned in the other Gospels? So we're looking at somebody who's mentioned in the other Gospels. If we were to just stop right there and take a crazy guess as to somebody who is really close to Jesus, narrow it down to three names for me. Peter, James, and John, right? I mean, because if we're talking about this one is really close, those are the really close ones. All right. Well, it's not likely somebody who's been named in the Gospel of John, because John is purposefully not naming him. And we have the name Peter, Andrew, Philip, Thomas, and Judas. So we can definitely remove Peter. Why? Because Peter talks to the disciple who Jesus loved, and I'm assuming he's not talking to himself. We see this multiple times, such as in John chapter 13. This is the first time we see this term used, the disciple whom Jesus loved. John 13, verse 23 says, "There was reclining on Jesus' bosom one of his disciples whom Jesus loved. So Simon Peter gestured to him and said to him, 'Tell us who it is from of whom he is speaking.'" So this disciple then will talk to Jesus. So we know this is somebody really close when Peter is saying, "Hey, you're close to him. You find out what he's saying." Okay. Well, it's not Peter, so process of elimination, we're down to two, right? Well, the next thing we find out about John in John chapter 21 is that many people thought that this disciple would never die. How's that help us? I'll give you...
James died
early. James was the first apostle to die. So it's not likely James. And then when we find out that this person wrote the book and that the, of the four Gospels, John was written last, according to tradition, we only have one name left. And then it, everything else falls together. So we don't know for certain, but everything points to this being John. John is the disciple whom Jesus loved. So now I come back to the question, why would John refer to himself this way instead of saying me or John? Well, I suppose it could be a modest term that he doesn't seem to mention his family's name at all. His mom, he doesn't mention. He doesn't mention James. He doesn't mention himself. Or perhaps it's just really emphasizing, you know what's most important to me? Is how close I was to him. I don't know for certain. Okay. So on we go to question number D. What do we learn about John when we see someone else casting out demons? So we're spending a lot of time in Mark. Might as well stay with it. Mark chapter 9, verses 38 through 39. John said to him, "Teacher, we saw someone casting out demons in your name, and we tried to prevent him because he was not following us." And Jesus said, "Do not hinder him, for there is no one who will perform a miracle in my name and be able soon afterward to speak evil of me." So what's John's problem? Is John suddenly in favor of demons? Obviously not.
I don't think he got the idea that there were others who had that capability. And he thought it was just something, you know, I'll call it the apostles, the inner circle, the 12.
Yeah.
The only ones that were supposed to be.
It seems to me that it comes down to two possibilities. One is he's really concerned about Jesus, or two, he's really concerned about himself. This is our position. This is what we do. That guy can't do that. And he actually tried to stop him from doing that. Or he's concerned about Jesus because this is Jesus' power and his position, and the glory and the honor needs to be focused on him, sort of like the argument was with John the Baptist saying, do you realize that Jesus is now baptizing more people than you? And they seem to be concerned about John the Baptist's role. And he says, that's great. That's fantastic. He's got to increase and I have to decrease. Well, what we learn is that John doesn't like it when someone else is doing it and they were not followers of Jesus the way John was and the other apostles. We learn that he tried to stop them. And apparently that's where I wanted us to stop and go on to the next question. I want you to remember that, though, because at the end, if Lord willing, I get to the end this week, there's a point to some of this. All right, so what special role then did John have at the cross? We looked at John 19, verse 25. This was where the women were being listed out, and we were talking about whether John is a cousin or not. But now we know that the disciple whom Jesus loved, we're talking about John, and in verse 26 it says, "When Jesus then saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to his mother, 'Woman, behold your son.' Then he said to the disciple, 'Behold your mother.' From that hour the disciple took her into his own household." What are two things we can learn about John from that? You probably have other things. What are the two things I learned from John from this? Yeah, that's harder.
Jesus trusts him to take care of his mother.
Isn't that huge? I mean, moms are everything. We have one day we dedicate to moms coming up, Mother's Day. And it's not enough. We know moms deserve they deserve appreciation, and we want to take care of our mothers, and we would not just entrust our mother to anyone to be taken care of. It tells me a lot that he picks John. Tells me a lot about who John is. Trustworthy, reliable, a good man. The other thing is, where's he at? He's at the cross. He's the only apostle we find at the cross. So John is there, close, at the very end. And those are the two things I've observed about John, is he's the only apostle mentioned being near the cross, and he was worthy of Jesus' trust with his mother. So then in Acts chapter 3 and verse 1, now after Jesus has died on the cross and has been resurrected, he has ascended, the gifts of the Holy Spirit have been given, the church has begun. All of that's Acts chapter 2, church beginning. Next thing we see is, now Peter and John were going up to the temple at the ninth hour, the hour of prayer. So, where are they headed? We're finding out about John. He maintains a spiritual focus. He's going to the temple. He's going to the temple to pray. What happens to Peter at this point, though, and John? And by the way, we're going to talk about this again with Peter, because Peter's here and he's the focus. But what happens to them?
Beggar.
Yeah, there's a beggar. Lame.
And it ends up, that was a common thing that they would do, is they would place a person there.
Some place where there's going to be a lot of people, yes. Yes, and so they place them there. Peter heals them. The guy's standing up. He's glorifying God. He's clinging to Peter and John. And then everybody gathers around. They listen to Peter deliver a sermon. They get arrested. And when they are put on trial, in verse 13 of chapter 4, it says, now as they observed the confidence of Peter and John, and understood that they were uneducated and untrained men, they were amazed and began to recognize them as having been with Jesus. And so here we see a description of John as being untrained, uneducated, and now all of a sudden they have great confidence, and they realize, hey, you were with Jesus. And then we get that great statement from Peter and John in verse 19. Peter and John answered and said to them, whether it is right in the sight of God to give heed to you rather than to God, you be the judge. For we cannot stop speaking about what we have seen and heard. All right, so we see John in that circumstance. In Acts chapter 8, when you have the church has been spread because of Saul's persecution. Philip goes and he starts preaching in Samaria. He converts people, but they're baptized without receiving the Holy Spirit. So the apostles send Peter and John. So just like we saw Peter, James, and John, the three, afterwards we really see Peter and John having a very close relationship. And remember that account, because we'll come back to that also, hopefully, very quickly. All right. So, in Galatians 2 and verse 9, when Paul is going to Jerusalem, because there's been this dispute about circumcision, Paul goes there and he's going to meet with... Well, it says here, let's pick up in verse 7. It says, but on the contrary, seeing that I had been entrusted with the gospel to the uncircumcised, just as Peter had been to the circumcised, for he who effectually worked for Peter in his apostleship to the circumcised effectually worked for me also to the Gentiles. And recognizing the grace that had been given to me, James and Cephas and John, who were reputed to be pillars, gave to me and Barnabas the right hand of fellowship, so that we might go to the Gentiles and they to the circumcised. They only asked us to remember the poor, the very thing I also was eager to do. And so while we don't see John in a personal way, we just see Paul talking about John and his run-in with James. Is that James the apostle or James the brother of Jesus, not apostle? Anyone know?
The time frame for James the brother would be dead.
James the apostle is dead. This is the other James. Other James. Okay. So James, Cephas, Peter, and John. All right. So John is there given of high reputation, and he's known to be a reputed pillar of the church. And we see that his ministry was to the circumcised, to the Jews, and Paul's was to the uncircumcised. And from here, we see that John recognized the grace given to Paul and gave him the right hand of fellowship. And he also asked Paul to remember the poor. And I submit that third point is significant. All right. So last thing until we get to the last things. So John chapter 21, let's go back to that. This is when Jesus has been resurrected. He's getting near his ascension. He has gone to Peter, and on three occasions he has asked Peter, "Do you love me?" And we're going to talk about that later on. But as he starts talking to Peter about his work and about the future as to what's going to happen to Peter, Peter turns and he's concerned about what's going to happen to John. And so it says, picking up in verse 18, "Truly, truly, I say to you, when you were younger, you used to gird yourselves and walk wherever you wished. But when you grow old, you will stretch out your hand and someone else will gird you and bring you where you do not wish to go. Now this he said, signifying by what kind of death he would glorify God. And when he had spoken this, he said to him, 'Follow me.' Peter, turning around, saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following them, the one who also had leaned back on his bosom at the supper and said, 'Lord, who is the one who betrays you?' So Peter, seeing him, said to Jesus, 'Lord, and what about this man?' And Jesus said to him, 'If I want him to remain until I come, what is that to you? You follow me.' Therefore, this saying went out among the brethren, that the disciple would not die. Yet Jesus did not say to him that he would not die, but only, 'If I want him to remain until I come, what is that to you? This is the disciple who is testifying to these things and wrote these things, and we know that his testimony is true.'" So that's the very end of the Gospel of John, talks about what's going to happen to him and clarifying something. So what did people think incorrectly about John?
Be alive.
He's not going to die. He's going to be alive when Jesus returns. So as he's getting older, you think it's getting close. It's getting close. All right. So how does John correct him?
That's not what Jesus said.
You just need to pay closer attention to what Jesus said. He just repeats what Jesus said. So now what's that mean? Okay. So they assume John would never die, and John clarifies what Jesus said. And by the way, I learned from that there's going to be misunderstandings, and the solution is go back and see what it said. Pay attention to the details. Okay. What New Testament books did John write? Very quickly. We got Gospel of John, 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, and the book of Revelation. All right, finally, growth of an apostle. First point. We already talked about it. Pretty clear. We don't call him the Son of Thunder. So we start off and we see him as the Son of Thunder. And now we see him as the Apostle of Love. But look what else happened with John. Vengeance on the Samaritan village. What happened with John in Acts chapter 8? In Acts chapter 8, he was sent to the Samaritans. And after he did that, in Acts chapter 8 and verse 25, when they're on their way back, "So when they had solemnly testified and spoken the word of the Lord, they started back to Jerusalem and were preaching the gospel to many villages of the Samaritans." So we see John going from, I want God to destroy them, to now he is teaching them. We see John rejecting a man who casts out demons, but did not, that's terrible grammar, but did not, was not following us. He was not following in the right way, right? What did John do with Paul when Paul comes to Jerusalem? He recognized him and he'd offered the right hand of fellowship. Yet, what was Paul doing? Paul was casting out demons and he did not follow Jesus in the same way. He never followed Jesus while Jesus was on earth. And so what we have is Paul is like this other guy, but John's changed. John's no longer trying to stop him. John acknowledges him, recognizes him, blesses him, sends him on his way. And what we see with John, we see growth. We see somebody who is changing because of the gospel and because of following Jesus. And then, one last thing I'll point out, and that is faithful until death, which, by the way, comes from one of John's writings in Revelation chapter 2. And it says that we should be faithful unto death, or until death. And that can have two different meanings. What are the two different meanings of faithful until death? Say that really loud for me, Bernard.
To the point of dying,
kind of like James. What else could it mean?
Until you die,
kind of like John. What we find with John is everything tells us John lived a long time. There's a reason why people were thinking he's not going to die. He's outlasted the other apostles. He's supposedly is 90 or so when he dies. So he lives a long time. He would have been called when he was probably around 20, 22 is when he was being called by Jesus to be an apostle, a fisher of men. Whole time he follows Jesus. And he sets an example for us, and that is we need to be disciples for the long haul. And for some people, it may be a really short time. You may be like James, and you may be persecuted, and you may die at a young age, but some of us, we may live a long time. And I've wondered what that was like for John as he watches friend after friend after friend be arrested, persecuted, and killed. Until finally, he's the last one. And what was that like? Anybody who wanted to know about Jesus, he's the guy, the only one left to come talk to. But he stayed faithful. And we didn't really get into John from the book of Revelation, but what's the situation we see John in at the end of the book, at the end of the Bible in the book of Revelation? Where's he writing from?
He's on the Isle of Patmos.
And why is he on the island of Patmos? For the sake of the gospel. Yeah. And he's saying, I'm a fellow part of your tribulation. So John didn't have the easy life. He just had the long life. So that's an example for us to be faithful until death, either James' way or John's way. All right. Thank you for your time, your attention. Next week, I will not be here. Gary has voluntold. Gary will be teaching. And we're going to look at Peter now. And with Peter, we're going to break Peter up and spend a little bit more time. So Peter's into three different sections. And next week will be Peter from his calling to his confession. So we'll stop there. Ashley, would you be willing to lead us in a prayer?
Sure.